Okay, right. My name is Paul Collins. It is the 21st of April 2005. I'm with Alan Price, and I'm going to be interviewing Alan in connection with the work that he used to do at Harrison Pearson. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Can I just ask you to say before we start that you're happy with me to record this interview?
No problems at all.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Can you tell me when it was you worked at Harrison Pearson?
I started in March 1961, age 15, straight from school.
All right. And how long did you work there for?
I worked at Harrison Pearson's till it shut in, I think it was 1972.
Mm-hmm.
And I was given the option of being made redundant or moving to J.T. Price's Brickyard Cricket Field Works.
Yeah.
And I decided, as I was getting married the next day, I decided to, I better stick with a job.
Stick with a job.
So I moved to Cricket Field Works until that closed later.
Can you remember when that closed?
It would probably be somewhere around about 1980.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Can you remember of your time when you were working at Harrison Pearson's, whether it was basically a good place to work or a bad place to work?
It's a very happy place.
Yes.
The workforce were superb.
Yeah.
We worked hard. We didn't get paid a lot of money, but we worked hard.
this has come through a number of times.
But I hardly ever had a day off. So it must have been a very
happy... That's always a very good sign, isn't
yes,
it? Whether you have time off.
The people were out of this world.
Yeah. And what was your job there?
I was a hand moulder.
A hand moulder. Well, can you tell me a little bit about what hand moulding involved?
Hand moulding was making bricks by hand.
Right.
With wet clay into wooden moulds, mm-hmm, and turning them out onto the floor. You had your own... Everyone had their own area.
Yeah.
Which they call stoves.
Right.
They're probably...
These terms are coming up in the interview.
Yeah, so I mean, they were... You could have a large building where there would only be two men in, or two men and perhaps two women.
Yeah.
Because we work with women as well. There were women moulders as well.
There seemed to be quite a number of women who over the years were employed making the bricks by hand.
Yes, I mean...
Yeah.
The one I work with, close to, or not alongside, but was Nellie Coleman,
yes,
who worked till she was about 85, 86.
Now, is she the lady whose husband used to come to work with her because she had to look after him? Is that the lady, or do you remember that?
That may be before I started. I mean, yes, she was well into her, probably her 70s when I actually started.
There's a story that, I think it was her husband had what we now know as dementia.
I do believe that and could be the one, yes.
Mr. Ronald Pearson,
yes.
Allowed her to bring him to work, and they used to put a plank on a couple of bricks and he used to sit by her like that.
That could
and
be
then
just before,
when,
yeah,
when the company was taken over and the new management moved in,
yeah,
They didn't like that arrangement, and they stopped doing that.
I can't actually remember.
But that's
that.
Before your time.
I was there when Ronnie Pearson was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was there
when it was taken over
by Dyson Refactories.
That's right. Maybe the story got a little bit confused by one or two people. But anyway.
But she only lived.
She was very
three or 400 yards away from the brickyard. You see.
Yeah.
She only lived in Bull Street.
Ah, right.
Which is just down
yeah
the road.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, that's yeah. No distance at all. Mm. When you say you were making bricks, so what are we talking about? Ordinary sort of house bricks?
No, we didn't make house bricks at all. Fire bricks.
Fire bricks, right.
For furnaces.
Yeah, so that they were bigger than what people
they
used to
would
think
be
of
vary from a couple of ounces up to, some would go up to probably close and half a ton, the big gas retorts.
Right. Yeah,
which
and these are retort linings
for the old gas works.
Furnace linings and that sort
furnace
of stuff.
Linings, yeah. Heavily dependent on British steel.
Yeah,
which was the one reason we were given for a lot of the brickyards shutting down.
Right,
with all the steelworks closing, yeah, the demand for the fire bricks.
Yeah, just vanished.
They did try and into different. They did nice storage heaters, what people had in their houses before central heating.
Yes.
We did make those in the end. That was machine made. Rather than moulded.
During the time you spent at Harrison Pearson, were you doing basically the same job all the time, or did you sort of progress?
If for some reason or other someone didn't turn up in one of the gangs, the setting or the drawing of the kilns, they would ask me to go out and help. You know, I would do the setting drawing or work on a press or any other machines.
Was that usual or unusual there? I mean, when did people sort of fill in and that sort of
fill
thing?
In? Yes. There was no problem.
Right. So there was no.
No one would come in and do the moulding.
No,
but the moulders could go out.
Oh, right. I see. Right. Okay. So the moulding was regarded as a skilled. Very
you
skilled
were
job.
The older people. The older moulders when I started.
Yeah.
Were sort of the elite. Put it that way.
Yeah. Right. I'm with you.
I always thought they were, you know,
people to look up to.
Yes.
And to learn from.
Yes.
And respect.
Yes. Yeah. Because you actually work with them.
Yeah.
When I left school, I worked with them for 3 or 4 years before I was allowed to go on my own.
Yes. They used to be, almost literally.
I was called, you were a brickmaker's page.
That's what you were called
officially.
There's an old phrase of this sort of training, which was called sitting by Nelly.
Yeah.
And in this case, almost true, because there was a Nelly to,
there was
to work
a Nelly
by.
Too,
and,
yeah.
And that basically, you know, they put the youngsters, usually the young lads, with an older hand who would just watch them, and then they would
help
do something.
Because they were rolling the clay, and
you do a bit like fetching and carrying
bringing the clay to him and rolling the clay for him, and he would be making it.
So you'd fetch and carry and prepare, and he'd do the actual.
And then when you thought you'd have a go, when you thought you were good enough, to earn enough money, on your own, then you were given the chance.
Can you remember the were you still paid on piece rates?
Yes.
Because the various wages clerks that I've talked to say that the people who worked there were very good at knowing how much their wages should be. Because although the piece rates were very complicated,
we could work our wages out to the farthing.
I thought that Mary said that.
Yes.
Yes, and the various people at Folliders have said
that. And when the farthing went out. The bricks are still priced in farthings.
Oh, are they? So what they do, round it up or
round it up or round it down?
Yeah, all right. I understand that now.
You could argue what the situation was.
Yeah.
if a company ordered a brick for their furnace
and
it had never been made before.
Yes.
There'd be new moulds made by the carpenters. And you would make that brick and then you would have to barter with the manager. You would come up with what you thought the brick was worth.
Oh. So in other words, if this was a brick that there wasn't a set rate for, then you would agree it with the manager.
Yeah.
But after you'd made it?
After we made it.
I suppose because after you'd made it, you'd know how much work went into it.
Yeah.
Yes. So you'd know how many hours you put into it and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
you would fall out with the manager some days. He would argue for days and days. You could argue. I have known arguments over a penny.
Good grief.
Old penny.
Good grief.
For days.
Yeah. That's astonishing. And I mean, how much would one of those special bricks actually cost? Or what would you be asking for doing it?
I mean, at the time, you may have been asking for an old shilling, sort of five pence for it.
Yeah. And you might be arguing over a penny within that or a halfpenny within that.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about the time when there's like 12 pennies to it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And he would say, no, I'm only going to give you 11.
Yeah.
And you might just say, well, you'd allow yourself a bit of room to manoeuvre.
Yeah.
Say myself, 11 and a half, we'll settle for 11 and a farthing, or 11 and a half penny, you know. It was like that.
Presumably the halfpennies and the farthings would work out because you made more than
one. If you were making 400 to 500 bricks a day,
it worked out.
You know.
And, well, it's worth it. It sounds not much to argue about a farthing, but if you're making
some of the smaller bricks, the smaller linings, the brick linings, you would probably make 400 to 500 a day.
Right, yeah. So, well, every day. Yeah.
So, in 5 days, you might make a couple of thousand a week.
So, you worked in the brickyard, were you indoors, undercover, outdoors?
Indoors. You had your own building.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many other people would be? How many other moulders would be in there?
There was four. There was four of us in the building I was in.
Right.
Two men and two women.
And your work area was called a stove.
A stove. I call them stoves. Yeah.
Right.
Because it's all underfloor heating.
Yes.
By an open fire, the one in underneath the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just pulled it, the heat would just come the full length of the building. And,
right.
Yeah. When it was, you know, I mean, but when the weather was bad.
Yeah.
You imagine putting your hands into cold clay all day long. Terrible.
Do you have any problems with your hands as a result?
I'm just starting to get a bit of arthritis now.
Blimey. Oh dear. Never mind.
But I mean, I'm sort of 59, so.
Yeah.
You get that whether you're virgin and be cured or not, don't you?
I suppose that's right. Yeah, I suppose that's right. Yeah. I mean, it can come from other things as well, can't it, as well? Can you recall the other people that you worked with or who were there at the time?
I can remember, I mean, a lot of the people are still alive, to be honest. I worked with a chap named Arnold Evans.
Right.
He's still alive, he lives in Briar Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I did go and see him a few months ago. Billy Jones, Ellen, Nellie Coleman.
Yes.
There was Doris Hunt.
Yes, that name's
Lizzie
come up.
Kendrick.
Yes.
There was Noah Evans when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
The Timmins brothers.
Mm-hmm.
There was one lived in around the Delph on the corner. Mm-hmm. I think he eventually had his legs off. I remember.
Yeah. So when you started, there must have been
the height of that was
quite a lot of people who'd been there a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. So they started well before the war, really.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you first started there, were they still sending stuff out by canal, or was it all going out by rail?
It was coming to the end of the canal business. It was virtually about the time I started. It was sort of the very end of the canal, the barge, just coming up to lorries. But
right.
There were no pallets
and
forklift trucks. Everything was done by hand.
Good grief. Yeah.
You would actually load. I mean, when I went out on the lorries, when they were short,
they
had the loading gangs.
Yeah.
You would have a lorry. There wasn't many articulated lorries at the time. They're just rigid. And if a lorry got 5,000 building brick sized fire bricks, you'd work it out so many across, so many down, and then so many high.
Yeah.
And
you'd stack them by hand.
And you were stacked. You'd have two on the lorry.
Yes.
And you'd both be two throwing up.
Absolutely.
And then eventually, when they did come to pallets.
Yeah.
And they hadn't got a forklift. You put the empty pallet on the lorry,
and stack the pallet.
And stack the pallet on the lorry,
so they could use a forklift.
British Steel or wherever they're going,
they could use a forklift the other end,
or crane, whatever they wanted to use. Yeah,
absolutely astonishing. It really is amazing.
And of course, and also, you would have to wheel these bricks out to get to the lorry because the brickyard was that many. There was that many round kilns.
Yes.
You know, St. Pearson.
Yes.
Because you couldn't get big lorries around anyway.
Because all that's been cleared, you can't see.
I know, that's all gone now. But I mean, at the time, you couldn't get round with lorries. So you'd have to.
Because these things were too close together, and you had to like weave through them, sort of thing.
Yeah, the lorry wouldn't be able to get round.
Yeah.
So you'd have to wheel the bricks. You might be wheeling 100 to.
So how far into the site did the lorries come? Did they go through the arch? Did they go through the arch in the offices? Did they go down the side?
Just about.
Because I'm thinking about the use of the weighbridge. I mean,
the weighbridge, yeah. You go through the arch, yeah.
Yeah. So that was another limit, because you know, obviously you can't get anything that big through that arch, can you?
But as I was saying, as the time I was talking about, you wouldn't have got articulated lorries.
No.
It was much easier when I went to Cricket Field Works.
Yeah.
Because we had got forklifts then.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972.
Can you recall the use of the weighbridge and seeing the weighbridge being used?
Yeah.
I was told it wasn't everything that was weighed, because the company's own clay that came from the Delph wasn't weighed because they trusted themselves. But if they bought some in from somebody else, they're the ones they weighed. Is that right?
They weren't known for giving. They didn't give a lot away, but the management didn't.
No.
You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, the clay was bought in from everywhere. I mean, I can remember one of our bosses, while I was at Cricket Field, while I was at Harrison Pearson, as we open casted the Netherton by another church.
Mm-hmm.
One of our bosses went to there and he took charge of that open cast site to get the clay out for us. I mean, it come from various places. Scotland, I mean, the best, the better clay was supposed to be deep mined in Scotland. It wasn't open cast. I mean, they used to say, they used to say some of this open cast clay was, could be rubbish.
Yeah.
If we mixed it with some of the good stuff, you know
I'm
what I mean?
I'm with you.
And some of the better clays would make, would stand higher temperature than, there was different grades of clay.
I'm with you. Yeah. So there was a, like, blending went on, basically, as we call it, right?
Blending on the mills,
Right. Well, that's an interesting thing that nobody had told me about before.
Yeah.
So working in the brickyards, did you have much contact with the people in the offices?
Not too much.
Apart from to do with pay.
Apart from going up, I mean, and obviously if you cut yourself, because you were actually using razor sharp knives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite easy to cut your fingers. And you'd have to go, you'd have to walk from wherever you worked to the office.
Dripping blood.
Dripping blood.
It's not funny, really, but.
And the girl would virtually faint if you were covered in blood.
Oh, dear.
But, I mean, that's where the plasters were.
Yeah. And then the only other time would really, I suppose, be payday Friday.
Payday Friday, and there used to be a pay slip.
The pay slip on a Wednesday.
On a Wednesday.
So I'm getting that. I'm getting the picture.
Which was about, I wouldn't be, would be the size of that, which is about, say, 3 inches by a quarter of an inch.
Good grief. Good Lord.
And all that beyond that payslip was pounds, shillings and pence.
Good Lord. And that's all?
That's it.
And it wouldn't be quantified, it would be spelt out made up?
No.
No.
You would keep your own record.
Yes.
You would have your own book.
Yes. So you'd actually write. You'd actually keep a tally.
You would actually tally. Put a tally on every day. The foreman would come down every day and ask you what you did the day before.
Right.
And you would. He would book it in.
Yeah. That's astonishing. That's astonishing.
And you would know to the fall in how much.
Yeah. This comes through. I mean, every one. I've talked to four people who worked in the offices, three of whom did a succession of, the one who followed Mary, the one who followed her, and they all say exactly the same. Mm. You had to be red hot on the pay, not only because of the management, but particularly because the workers would know exactly to the farthing, to the halfpenny, or whatever was still in use, how much they were owed for the week. You know, it was really, really, really good. Okay. Some of these questions are slanted towards the people who worked in the offices. So obviously you didn't. So don't worry about that. And you started early '60s.
61.
Okay. So I've got some questions about the centenary, but that would have happened by the time you started.
Right.
Centenary was 52.
That was well over by then,
wasn't it? Okay. Well, let's just talk about. It was just unusual things that happened, incidents or things that happened that you can remember, if there's anything.
I can't remember too many.
It's okay. Once you care.
There wasn't much of a social life.
No.
After work.
Right.
Apart from Christmas time and.
Yeah. Was it like a Christmas meal or a...
No.
They weren't like that.
I mean, if you took anything out of the canteen, it would be a bottle of tea.
Oh, right.
You'd take an empty milk bottle and the lady would fill it up with tea.
Yeah.
And you would keep that either by the... If you worked in this... The band moulders had their own little fireplace.
Yes.
Using the obviously the firm's coal.
Yes.
And you would have this... milk bottle full of tea on the fire.
Yeah.
And if you worked in a kiln, you'd find the warmest place and just keep it there.
Yeah.
Because it was too far to... It was... Wherever you worked at Addison Pearson, you'd got to walk.
Yeah.
Because the canteen was along that top road by the office, where the offices are.
Yeah.
It'd be sort of the back of the Crown Pub.
Yeah.
As is now,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I think it's still there, to be honest.
And
there was a railway line that came in.
That's right. Some of the tracks still show.
I mean, I can remember loading the trains.
Yes.
I mean, you would actually physically walk up the line, take the brake off a truck, off a carriage, and shove it down.
Yeah.
Physically shove it down.
How did the wagons get in? Did a locomotive push them in, or were they just like...
We would actually walk up the line and push them.
Good grief. So they didn't have a tractor or a horse or anything like that?
No.
Good Lord. Was it reasonably level?
Yeah, there was just a slight...
Yeah.
It wasn't difficult once you took the brake off.
Right. Good grief. No. So the
We had problems with it. We had Goro lorry.
Yeah.
Well, it was on oil, they would just
push it down.
Yeah.
Good grief. Because I was just thinking, you know, some fully loaded wagons. I mean, they're talking
about... We wouldn't touch the fully loaded ones.
Just the empty ones.
The empty ones.
Oh, right.
Because the
so presumably
British Rail would back them in off the main line.
Right.
And perhaps just leave them up the top end.
Right.
And then if we wanted to bring them down to close to where the offices are, we would just shove them down ourselves.
Blimey. Goodness me. That's amazing.
But science, still saying that, you might have had to push that, when you load this truck, you may have pushed those bricks on a barrow from the other side of the works. You may have actually, if you know Harrison Pearson's yard, from the canal side, up to the route, up to the office, by barrow, flat barrow.
Yeah, blimey. A few trips there then, I think.
And I'm not talking about tarmac roads.
No. You're just talking about impacted.
Concrete roads.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes when it gets wet, it has.
And when it was wet.
Yes.
It was wet.
Yeah. Well, we know. I know the site well from the restoration and everything like that. So that's right. Do you recall the tramp used to sleep in the firm?
Yeah. Yeah. There was one round at Delft that was Harold Thompson.
Yes, that's the name of the
other one we had. But we had him more at, that was Harold Thompson. We had one at, well, it was at Cricketfield Works.
But Harold Thompson used to sleep in the warm kilns. He used to play the violin.
Yes. There was one named Jack Hambury.
Yeah.
But I think he was more or less, when I went to Cricketfield Works, because most times when we went to Cricketfield, he'd be just coming out as we were going in. He'd slept all night in the warm. In fact, I nearly run him over one morning.
Good grief.
Because I was working with one of the gangs. Someone had turned up and I was working with them. We had these diesel trucks then in 72, 73. And the bricks, you put them on a pallet and you back this. Mm. And I backed him one in and I just saw him at the last minute. Otherwise, he'd been gone.
There's a number of stories about. Was it?
There were no trouble.
But there's lots of stories about having to check the kilns to make before you loaded them to make sure he was out and all that sort of stuff, you know. But
can I just stop and go to the toilet?
Okay, that's fine. No problem at all. We'll stop there. You just take that off. Okay. It is Thursday, the 21st of April, 2005. I'm at 4 Hyperion Road, Stourton. Talk.